Alan Crane Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for Autumn Semester 2022. Today, component costs of capital. Okay, but before we do that, a look at the numbers, and we see that it was a grouchy day for Wall Street. What had happened was the Federal Reserve just said, we're going to bring up interest rates again, 0.75%, 75 basis points. In other words, they are dead serious. They know what has to be done to deal with inflation. We have a strong, we have good indications that the economy is strong enough to take this because of obviously the GDP growth that just was posted for last quarter at 2.6%. That's decent. And we have no indication that we're sliding toward a recession. Like I said, though, Christmas is going to be kind of the Christmas sales are going to tell a lot. However, when the Fed says we're going to jack up the interest rates, that makes the traders run behind the sofa and bark like a bunch of poodles. And it also got a little bit shaky today. I'll tell you an interesting little story about Twitter. Twitter went private. And thanks to he of the cloven hoof, I lost $1,000. Just disappeared into thin air thanks to that pothead. And I won't mention his name, Elon Musk, but so I'll have a word about that, which is still sticking in my craw this afternoon. But as you can see, the equities were down. Now, oil, as you can see, it is in that range, 82 to 89. It doesn't seem to want to go, it bounces around in there, but it doesn't seem to have any interest in going over that or under that range there. So gas prices will remain relatively stable. I noticed that they've shaved off a little bit over the last week. That's probably because they had a production run of distillates that constricted the supply of gasoline briefly, bringing up the price. Now they've gotten that supply straightened up, so it's back to cracking the gasoline. If you hear me using terms like distillates, those are not gasoline, and when I say cracking, if you ever see, and there's one as you're driving towards Chicago, you'll see those tall towers at that oil refining facility. Those are cracking towers. As the molecules of the hydrocarbon are brought up, they're pulled off as they're heated, and different grades of fuels are being taken off at different levels along the cracking tower's length. And so they're cracking gas now again, which is great, and that'll bring keep the gasoline prices fairly stable. Gold and silver were not doing anything today, so investors were getting out of equities. They were certainly not interested in commodities. So where was it? Bonds. The yields went up, obviously, because the Fed says we're going to raise interest rates, and the markets don't wait for them to do it. They react on the expectation. That's like the old saying, buy on the rumor, sell on the news. The rumor is that they're going to go up with interest rates, so the bond yields went up, which means the prices went down, which means that investors are getting out of bonds. They're getting out of bonds, they're certainly not going to commodities, and they're getting out of equities. That means that they are going to cash. They are getting back into that wait and see place, that parking lot, that harbor, just to see where the winds are going to blow next. I was kind of expecting by the end of the day that the bulls were going to have a bargain hunting spree. They might have it tomorrow, but we'll see. Coming over here, Japan had a good strong day up, very strong day, up 1.75%. And when the sun set in Tokyo, it rose in London. And London had a good surge there. There's a lot more confidence in this new prime minister that he's going to be a very competent leader. But there was some profit taking there at the end. But overall, it did okay for the day. It was up from the beginning, up about 0.2%. So a decent day around the world, except for here in the United States, where it got slapped around and dropped down. But that's just our gig. One, I was trying to think. One interesting thing, just as a side note, and I am hopeful that some of you would consider taking my international finance course. You'll see why this happens. But when interest rates are going up, that makes, you know, the present value of future expected cash flows companies go down. So you'll see markets slide downward when interest rates are going up. But at the same time, there is a silver lining on that, aside from the fact that we're slowly killing the dragon of inflation. This interest rates going up makes the dollar stronger overseas. That hurts our export industries because our stuff gets more expensive overseas, but it helps our imports get cheaper. So that stuff that comes from China, Japan, Europe, Canada, South America gets cheaper. So that can bode well for our overall cost of living, especially for food products, durable goods like cars and household appliances. So there is that silver lining when our interest rates go up. It makes imports cheaper here. It hurts our export industries because our stuff gets more expensive over there because our dollar is stronger. But keep that in mind as well. And if you want to know more about that, by all means, walk the wild side in my FIL 344 course. Enough of that. We are coming into the last phase of the company. Now, here is where we are actually looking at the company from the inside, making the decisions about what projects to take on, how to fund our future, our planned projects, and all of that. And if I were to give you a breakdown, the component costs of capital. Now, this is why these formulas I'm writing here, this is why you get 2 6x4 note cards on the final exam, because you might want to dedicate one of them just to these formulas. And I strongly encourage you, see the number, put the number in. See the number, put the number in. That's how you do a successful job on getting the quantitative problems done properly. Now, the sources of capital. Now, remember, capital is long-term funds. Money is short-term. We're talking about that money in the big piles, the millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. The first place companies can go is to the debt markets. They can borrow. They can borrow money. And that money that they borrow has a cost, obviously. So we designate that cost as R sub D. By the way, all of these costs are in percentages. Like, just like cost of capital, just like your interest rate is your cost of debt. So the cost of debt. But the problem with debt is that actually there's something unusual, two things unusual about debt. Debt is cheaper than equity for two reasons. One is because you have to pay your interest payments, your fixed obligations to your debt holders before the shareholders can get any money. So the debt holders have the prior claim, so they don't want as much scratch because they're in a safer position. The other thing is that the interest on debt is tax deductible. If you remember your accounting, that income statement, your operating income minus your interest expense is your pre-tax minus your taxes gets you your net your earnings. You're subtracting the interest rate off, the interest off. So we care only about the after-tax cost of debt, which is the before cost tax cost of debt times 1 minus the corporate tax rate, which now is fixed at 21%. Used to be more. Even back in your teen years, it was considerably higher. hence why we have these budget deficits now. Okay, we're in good shape. Now, about this cost of debt, I'll get back to it here in a minute. But just to lay out the other ones, equity has three different flavors in terms of capital. The first one is preferred stock. That's that stuff. It's actually pretty safe for investors. You got a dividend that is stated right on the stock certificate. 1.8% of par value, $70 per share. It is a fixed amount that the investors, the buyers of the preferred stock, kind of know is going to be there forever as long as the company stays in business. So this preferred stock is actually a pretty nice thing. We designate its cost as R sub preferred, P, R sub P. And the formula for calculating that is easy. Now, then you have your common stock. Now, the book uses a term that is unfortunate, but it does kind of capture it. When you make money, get to the bottom line of your income statement. Some of that's going to be paid as dividends, maybe, but the rest of it goes into kind of like a phony account called retained earnings. And the book uses the term the cost of retained earnings. The way that we use to call it in kind of more sophisticated terms is we call it your internally generated equity. In other words, this is the capital that's left over that you made from selling stuff. It's that accumulation in at least a theoretical way that shows up as retained earnings. Remember, retained earnings beginning plus net income minus dividends is retained earnings at the end. That's like a theoretical pool of money, of capital, that's just sitting there waiting to be used for capital projects. But using the term retained earnings is not what a finance person would say. We would talk about this as what is the capital that has been generated by the company's actual operations? The shocking thing is that sooner or later, a company has to make money the old-fashioned way. It has to earn it. It can't borrow forever. And the last one, we'll designate this one R sub S. This is the cost of your existing common stock. Think about it like an opportunity cost. It's just sitting there. If you're not using it, you could use it for a factory or for a new product line, but it has a cost. If you don't use it, it is costing you by its non-use. So in other words, you decide that you're going to stay in the basement and eat Cheetos. The cost of that would be, for someone like you, maybe about $70,000, $80,000 a year. You're not seeing that. That's exactly right. It's just the potential. And that's what we mean by this cost of common stock. It's that retained earnings pool. What potential does it have? And then there is new common. The cost of externally generated equity. In other words, selling more stock to raise capital for projects. Now, I listed them in this order kind of deliberately because most likely your cheapest source of capital is going to be debt because it is so safe that the investors don't want a lot for to be paid, and it is tax deductible. Preferred comes in next because it is, you know, kind of like a fixed income instrument. So investors are going to say, you don't really need to pay us all that much for this because, you know, we get our dividend before the common shareholders can get any, and it lasts forever. So it's not going to have a terrible cost to it, which is one of those reasons why it kind of boggles the mind that companies are so afraid of preferred stock anymore. They don't issue it because it is a good source of cheap capital. And then, of course, then stock, the cost of common stock, is actually going to be pretty stiff because investors in common stock are all at risk. It could go up, it could go down, it could go sideways. So the cost of it is going to be noticeably more than preferred and much noticeably more than debt. And then this last one, the cost of new common. It's going to be the most expensive. And the reason is that when a company sells common stock, it doesn't get the price of the stock. Let's say the stock is selling at $50 a share. The company won't get $50 a share, even though that's what will show up on its books, because the investment banking syndicate or the rainmakers in general are going to take their scratch. We call that the float. And I have a story from my days of consulting. It's actually a story from the 1990s, and it actually intersects in a very minor way with a movie that was made some years ago called Air America, starring Tom Cruise, a true story. And this was a side part of that whole mess. It was one of the after effects of that whole mess. But I can show you that R sub n can be staggeringly high. What kind of numbers am I talking about here? Give you an idea. If your cost of debt might be, after tax cost of debt might be 4%, cost of preferred, sometimes it can, I found examples where the cost of preferred is less than the cost of debt, but it may be a little more, maybe about 4.5, 5%. The cost of equity can be between 11% and 25%. And then new equity, if that's 11% to 25%, you could see new equity at 12% to 26%. And so you're talking about selling common stock. It just kind of makes you wonder, why would a company do this if it's the most expensive way of raising capital? And we'll talk about that in a little more depth in the next lecture. But for now, this is the layout, and we need the formulas. I just gave you the formula for the after-tax cost of debt, but I have to make a mention here on one thing. Suppose that you had RST 5.50% 2040. And right now, the price of that is, let's say, $985. You see, it's not the cost. See this coupon right here? Well, we could say, isn't that R sub D? In a way, yeah, but let's say that this is their junior subordinated debt. That means that the next time that they borrow money, it's going to be at least that. But we can do even better than that. We can say, what's the market say that debt should be paying right now? That's called the yield to maturity. So we could go in and crank out the yield to maturity on this. Really? It's off? Okay. Apps, finance, TVM solver. Let me exit and get that up again. On apps, finance, TVM solver. So now we have 2040. The term of this debt is 2040 minus 2022. Okay. We need to yield to maturity, so I percent we leave alone. The price value right now is $985. The payments are going to be 5.5% of the face value of $1,000, $55 a year, and the future value, the face value, is $1,000. So now we can go up here and get the yield to maturity, alpha solve, 5.63%. That is the cost of debt. All right, 5.63%, sorry, 5.63%. There you go. That's what the market says the company should be paying for its most risky debt, because that was its junior subordinated, that's their most risky. So you look for the riskiest debt that they have out there, it's the lowest priority debt out there, and you get its yield to maturity, because that's what the market says. If that company came to us today and borrowed money, that's what we would charge them right now. It's 5.63%. So in that case, the R sub D is going to be, after taxes, is going to be 5.63% times 1 minus the tax rate, which is 21%. So this company's cost of debt after taxes is going to be 5.63 times 1 minus 0.21. So the company's after-tax cost of debt is 4.45%. Notice something. This cost and all the costs are in flux all the time. So as yield to maturity moves around a little bit, the cost of debt will move around a little bit. This is true of all of them. They are moved around by market forces. They don't move a lot in any given time frame, days, weeks, but they do float around. Now, before I go any further, I do want to bring up something. Why in the world are we doing this nonsense to begin with? It all has to do with something kind of the holy grail, the weighted average cost of capital, WACC. The weighted average cost of capital. A lot of companies use WACC as their discount rate. Remember what we did, net present values of future cash flows and all that? This is the number they use for the discount rate. It's that important that you can actually go to Standard & Poor's Global Net Advantage, and in one of those big tables, and I'll show you those on Wednesday, you can actually find the current WACC for a public company. But this WACC is actually the weight of debt times the after-tax cost of debt plus the weight of preferred times the cost of preferred plus the weight of existing equity times the cost of existing equity plus the weight of new debt times the cost of new debt. New equity. And the weights, you just add up the weights of each component. Like, for example, suppose I had one like this. Give me a second here. I want to make sure I'm running here. Okay. Component, market value, so let's say we had debt and preferred and common, and I won't include any new common in this. Suppose market value of your debt, that $987 million is on 10,000 bonds. So let's say that that's 9,870,000. The preferred stock, let's say that that's running about 8 million. No. Let's do something simple. Let's do 1,105,000. Oops, one more. Come on. And then your market cap on your common stock right now, outstanding, your market cap there is, let's say, 22,560,000. The first thing you would want to do is just add up all those values. That's the value of your company, the market value of your company. Just add those up. And in this case, 9870 plus 1105 plus 22,560, 33,535. And so the weight, all you do is take 89870 divided by the 33,535, 000. For the preferred, that weight would be 1,105,000 divided by 33,535,000. And that one would be 22, the common equity would be 22,560,000 divided by 33,535. And those should add up to a total of exactly 1.00. And I won't fatigue you with the rest of that. That's how you find the weights. And then you multiply each one by its respective cost, and you've got the weighted average cost of capital. It's one of those things, actually, Excel excels at doing this kind of mind-numbing work. But you can see it's not a difficult exercise at all to get your weights. Getting the costs is a little bit more of a dodgy thing. But anyway, that is how we get the debt. And it's also we can finally calculate WACC, which I do now on Wednesday. Now the cost of preferred. We're going to do a dirty trick here with the rest of these. At least it works pretty well in some cases. With preferred, it's just fine. There was a formula. Now I'm going to do preferred. I gave you a formula, you might remember. The price right now of preferred stock is the dividend divided by the discount rate on the preferred. I gave that to you a few weeks ago. What we do when we're getting the component cost, we just turn this around so that we say that the cost of preferred is the flat dividend divided by the current price. That's all we do. TZJ 2.5% preferred par value $40 per share is currently priced at $32.80 per share. Let's get this written down. And again, for heaven's sakes, just take the formula and stuff the numbers in where they belong. So in other words, the dividend here is going to be 2.5% of the par value, which is $40. And then you divide that by the current price, which is $32.80. That's all you do to get the cost. So in this case, I'm going to take 0.025 times $40, and I'm going to divide that by $32.80. 3.05%. It's a cost of preferred. You notice in this example, it's actually a little cheaper than the cost of debt. But there you are. So now that's how you get the cost of preferred. Okay? Let you make sure you get this all written down here. I don't want to plow you forward. And we'll do another example of this on Wednesday. So that it's not like you're going to be floating out there and you've got homework problems and homework examples in your online resources too. Just walk these formulas. Okay. So that's the cost of preferred. Here is the dodgy one. That little son of a dog right there. The one, it can be easy if the company is an old constant growth dividend company. In a case like that, this is for the existing common. Our next one. I gave you a formula that said that we can find the current price of common stock if it has a constant growth dividend as D1 over the discount rate for common minus G. That was that constant growth dividend formula from chapter 8, I think it was, or chapter 9. Okay. And remember that the D1 is the current dividend, D0, and you grow up one period. Now, for God's sake, on my next quiz, this is going to be what's on the next quiz. That's all there is. Take your time. Just do these formulas. If I rearrange this, I can solve for the cost of common stock. R sub S will be the dividend in the next period divided by the current price plus the growth rate. That's how you would calculate it. If the company is in a mature phase, growing its dividends at a constant rate. Notice something interesting there, though. Two things. One is, as the growth rate of the company's dividends increases, the cost of its common equity increases as well. Rapidly growing companies have higher cost of equity. Another thing too, this goes back to in my days of consulting. There were times at direct board of directors meetings when I would say our stock price is falling. And their normal reaction was, well, you know, so they'll just have to sit around and wait because, you know, we're still getting things together. they didn't understand, and it's understandable that they didn't understand, that as that price of that stock is falling, the cost of common equity is rising, so their weighted average cost of capital is rising. The interesting part is that companies don't see this. It's not right there in front of them. It's like a low-level fever hiding in the underbrush of their bodies. They don't exactly feel it for a long time. Eventually, it comes biting through because their weighted average cost of capital is going up, so they are rejecting more projects because their discount rate is rising. And so they are rejecting safer projects because their discount rates are too low. The WAC is killing them. So it has its effect, and eventually companies grasp this if they survive long enough. But that's one of the reasons why you say, yay, this company is growing at a really rapid rate. Well, after a while, that's going to be a downside to the company. The company needs to slow itself down, grow up, because if it keeps growing at that rate, its weighted average cost of capital is going to just keep going up, and eventually the company is going to get it. We are going to try to sell our stock, and the cost of no one's going to want it unless it's at a cheapo price. The obvious problem here is that not all companies pay dividends. Hell, not all companies are even public companies, so I can't get a P0 on them. There are a couple of ways around this. This is the common way if it's an older company. Another way is just the CAPM. We can remember that CAPM formula, the expected return to stock is going to be R sub F plus the beta of the stock times expected return to the market portfolio minus the risk-free rate. You can get it that way. As long as you just go to a service that gives what the eggheads say the expected return to the market portfolio is going to be for the next year, you go to the treasury tables and get the risk-free rate, and then you use the beta of the company. And you can get an estimate of the cost of common equity. This is kind of popular, but there's a problem with this. What happens if the company doesn't have a beta? Remember, I've shown you companies that don't have betas yet because they're too young. If it's a private company, it's not going to have a beta. One way around this is to find companies that are similar to the company you're looking at, companies that are public companies with betas, and take an average of those, use comparable comps, as we call them, to get an estimate of beta, and then go ahead with CAPM. Not too popular to do that, though, guarantee you. That's a little too much like work. Now, I'm sure that in the Treasury, the finance divisions, they'll do that, but it's not really that popular. I'll show you the one that is actually kind of the big one out there. It's called the equity premium approach, and it uses comparables. It says, okay, what is the average yield on companies for the company's debts that are similar to this company's debts? And then if you add an equity premium, you will get the cost of equity. Let me explain. We'll go to a service like Standard & Poor's. We'll get an average yield for companies' debts that are similar to this company's. Let's say it's, I don't know. Let's say the average yield is 5.80%. And we go to the Standard & Poor's, and you can find lists of costs of equity. Suppose the average cost of equity for these same companies is 12.05%. What that would mean is that right now, the industry average equity premium of stock over debt cost would be 12.05% less 5.80%. I'm not even going to try to do that in my head. Really, I'm that lame today? Okay, let's take 12.05 less 5.0 less 5.8, whoops, 80. So the industry right now is putting an equity premium on stock over debt of 6.25%. Okay, so now that would mean if I know this company's after-tax cost of debt is 4.45%, plus that equity premium, that should be its cost of stock. So that would be 10.70%. And by the way, if this seems like a blur, you're okay. First time I do it, it will. Unless you're very, very sharp. You just walk through these different ways to get the different pieces. Now, which do you use? Obviously, it's going to be whether, first of all, you'll use that first method if you know if you've got constant growth dividend. You'd use the second method instead if you've at least got a beta or a way to get an estimate of the beta. You'd use this way if those two ways are not available. But the secret of it is, I actually know more companies that are doing this third method. They're just finding the average yield on debt for companies like theirs. They're finding the average stock cost of equity. And then what they're doing is they're just saying that's the equity premium of the industry. Now add it to our company's current debt cost. And that gives us an equity cost. So this last most desperate method is very popular. It's pretty fast and easy. You just get the data. I'll even show you where you can get the data to do this. It's not that hard. As a matter of fact, as I'm thinking about it, Standard & Poor's Global Net Advantage actually gives you cost of equity for a whole lot of companies, tens of thousands. Anyway, last one here. New stock. The problem with new stock, and we're going to use that formula for the cost of stock, which was D1 over P0 plus G, and we're just going to do a tweak on it. When an investment banking syndicate sells your stock for you, they're going to take scratch for themselves. The company's stock may be selling at $28, but by the time the company sees it, it'll be down to $24, $25, because investment bankers are going to take a float from each share they sell. That's where they make some of their money. So what we do is we write the cost of new equity as D1 over P0 minus that float plus G. SJM common just paid a dividend of $2.20 per share that is expected to grow at a rate of 3% for the foreseeable future. SJM Common is currently priced at $28.10 per share. So the cost of existing common stock would be D1, 2.20 times 1 plus the growth rate of 0.03% divided by $28.10 plus 0.03. That's that formula, which I already erased. There's right there. That's for the current common. So we can do $2.20 times 1 plus 0.03 divided by the current price of $28.10 and then add to that mess 0.03. Don't use parentheses. That 0.03 is adding on to the whole mess of that fraction. So 11.09% is the cost of existing common. Now, the company can sell new stock with a $2.50 per share float from the investment bankers. Write all that down. We'll finish it on that piece. So here we go. So the cost of new equity is going to be $2.20 times 1 plus 0.03 divided by the $28.10 minus the float plus 0.03. Now, for heaven's sake, put that bottom thing in parentheses there. So here we go. $2.20 times 1 plus 0.03, that's D1, divided by, now in parentheses, we have to trap that price minus float, which is 2810 minus $2.50. Close the parentheses. Now plus, out there on the side, 0.03, 11.85%. the cost of new debt, new equity, is larger than the cost of existing common. Because you're losing, the company's losing some of what it got in fees to the investment bankers. So even though the company will have on its books $28.10 for a million, 10 million shares, it doesn't get all of that. And so the cost is higher. Is that real? Oh yeah. Now, I'll finish the story on Wednesday, but it begins in 1997 on an in Atlanta, Georgia, at the airport. In the huge back lot, there were all of these small, little tiny companies and medium-sized companies operating out of sheds and trailers. My two money rainmakers called me and said, meet us in Atlanta. And so we went there, we rented a nice fancy car, and we went to one of those trailers where there was a guy inside who needed $5 million so that he could start an airline that delivered packages for UPS, DHL, and the post office. He was going to lease some unused jets from Lufthansa, and he was going to need $5 million to start this company. He had all the FAA filings done. He had everything in order for contracts with UPS and DHL and the post office. And all he needed was $5 million. So we went there and we listened to him and we said, this is doable. In a week, we'll bring together the $7.5 million. And he said, no, you don't, no, I need $5 million. I said, yes, $5 million for you, $2.5 million for our people. Oh, he just absolutely had a fit. He just went bananas. And he said, get out. And so we politely thanked him and we got out. And the one young man and I, Jeff, we walked away. We parked our car deliberately quite a ways away. And the younger one, nice kid, Dan, he walked a little slower. And of course we heard, wait, come on, please. And so Dan said, guys, can you please wait? It was all set up, obviously. We went to the car and looked very upset by Dan fooling around. And then after about 5 minutes, Dan comes over. We've got him for $6.75 million. Deal done. $5 million with a float of $1.75 million. His cost of equity was through the roof. But he didn't care. He knew he had a dream and he was willing to pay us whatever we wanted for it. The deal fell through in a week and it had to do with Ronald Reagan, an arms triangle between Iran and Louisiana and Nicaragua, and a movie called Air America that featured Tom Cruise. This was a tiny little side story. One of the pilots who was flying the dope from Central America to trade for cash to buy arms from Iran got caught. He was the pilot of a number of them. And so the FAA figured out what had happened, who he was, and they shut him down and the deal fell apart. And we got into a little trouble, but nothing we couldn't handle. But for a while there, he was willing to pay a cost of equity capital that was on the order of 55%. But you'll do it if you have a dream and you believe in it. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.